This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and it is a very busy time to be the mayor of Boston, but he is taking time out for us anyway in our monthly Mondays with Mayor Marty Walsh. So welcoming back to the show, Boston Mayor Marty Walsh. Hello.
Thank you very much. Great to be with you today.
Great to have you. I kind of want to paint this picture, Mayor Walsh, because I was thinking about your last 10 days or so. A ballot box set on fire, daily statewide coronavirus cases above 1,000 people, in-person learning shut down in the schools, the chair of the Boston School Committee resigns even as they make an historic move to suspend the entrance exam to the exam schools, state lifts the eviction moratorium, three major holidays ahead. It is a massive task to be the mayor of Boston right now. How are you doing?
And don't forget about, we have a little election a week from Tuesday.
Oh, yeah, that.
You know, Boston's a great city, and I love being the mayor of our city. Obviously, every day there's new challenges that are in front of us. These are just very extraordinary times that we're all living in, and it's important for all of us to understand that, you know, we will get through all of these things. You know, it's complicated. I was saying the other day that to my chief of staff that, you know, there just doesn't seem to be any reprieve at all. You know, the other night, school committee meeting, there was a historic vote, lots of conversation, lots of emotion around it. And then to end the way it did was unfortunate. But you know, hopefully after next Tuesday, you know, coronavirus on top of it all has been very tense for everyone. So after next Tuesday, we'll see what happens. But I'm hoping for a certain outcome in that election. I think a lot of people who are listening to this radio show are hoping for the same outcome I'm hoping for. And you know, in this country, there's a lot of turmoil, and right now we have to get through it. And you didn't mention, but the racial unrest as well, the systemic racism, all of that stuff is front and center. And it's important for us to continue to move forward one foot in front of the other to get through this time.
So you just talked about the election. Let's just stay there for a minute. Police have made an arrest in the case of the ballots that were set on fire in a drop box in Copley Square yesterday. Are you concerned about more cases of election-related violence or tampering or vandalism? And how are you preparing the city for that?
Well, you know, I'm hoping that we don't have any violence. I think a lot of it's going to be what happened in the election. I think that, you know, you have one candidate in the president that has undertones of you know, creating, okaying violence. It's not going to be tolerated here in the city of Boston. The police department has increased their patrols in areas where election ballot boxes are located, but also we're preparing for election day to make sure that we have, and I don't think it's going to happen here, voter intimidation. I don't think we'll see it here in Boston. But you never know around the country. I think you'll see different pieces of it. As far as the ballot box, I want to thank the Boston Police Department for their swift action, and our law enforcement partners and members of the community played a role to arrest the suspect in Copley Square for the ballot box incident. This was an isolated incident, and so we're going to be making sure that we've asked the district attorney to investigate it to its fullest extent. Our number one priority is certainly making sure that the integrity of the elections are upheld. And I want to thank all the partners, and I think as we continue to move forward here, I think that hopefully this is an isolated incident. I think it might be, but we are going to continue. We have the book boxes monitored under surveillance cameras, and we're going to be increasing our security so people feel free to vote. And we want everyone to vote. So, you know, if you have an early vote ballot and you want to use these boxes in the primary, we had a couple places. We have 17 right now in the final. So we want you to use these boxes. We want you to make sure that, you know, you do your early vote, get all that in if you can, because the more people that vote now, the less lines we'll have on election day.
We talked a minute ago about some of these challenges with the coronavirus. The city now has an average positive test rate above 6%, according to the city's latest analysis of neighborhood testing data. I wanted to ask you, so we've been hearing public health officials for a while anticipate some kind of surge in the fall. And I wondered, are the numbers that we're actually seeing now in line with what you expected for this time of year and whatever modeling or planning you might have done? Or are these surges, is this surge bigger than you thought we'd be in right now? How are you looking at it and thinking about it?
I don't think that categorizes as a surge yet. It's definitely an increase. We're seeing our numbers go up every week now. The new numbers as of today, from yesterday and over the weekend, 273 new cases, which is a lot, probably the highest I've seen in a one day Actually, it might be 2 days in this number, but we're seeing we're in the 100-something range every day now for the last couple of days. That's the highest we've seen since around June. So certainly, our priority is making sure residents are safe and healthy. The experts have said that we would see potentially an uptick in the month of October, November, and December. And they also had mentioned that it is incumbent upon all of us that we could actually keep those numbers down by wearing masks and making sure that we do everything we can, social distancing, avoiding large gatherings. I'm also encouraging people two things today, to get tested. I think it's really important to have an accurate number of tests here in the city of Boston so we get an accurate account of what the number really is. And right now it's 6.2%. And the second piece is suggesting to people to get your flu shot, because as we head into this month of September, October, November area, that a lot of people are going to get the cold flu, and we it'll be confusing, and we want to try and cut down on emergency room visits if at all possible.
Mayor Walsh, callers are ready, so let's go to the phones. 800-423-8255. We've got Alicia on the line from Roslindale. Alicia, you're on with Mayor Marty Walsh.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm curious about Boston Public Schools. I know last week you announced that schools would remain closed until the infection rate dropped below 5%, yet I haven't seen the city or your administration make any announcements about reverting to a previous phase in order to lower the case rate and get our kids back to school. So I'd love to speak to that.
You dropped out there.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You're talking about schools. You haven't seen something. Sorry.
Well, I'm curious to know, and you said that schools would not reopen until the case rate dropped below 5%, yet I haven't seen the administration or the city take any steps to revert to a previous phase in order to lower the case rate so that kids can go back to school. So I'm wondering if you could address that.
I mean, no, what's happening now is we had the phases, the six phases and approaches. The first was on all online, second was highest needs, third was going to be kindergarten, 0, 1, and 2. What we were able to do was keep our high-need students in school through an increase of 4%. When it got to 5.7, we made the decision to close it. The next increase was from 5.7 to 6.2. So if we have two back-to-back weeks of 5% or less, we can bring our in-person high-need students back. And if we get to 4% or less, we will start the phased-in approach. And what we're trying to do now is really just explain to people the importance of staying consistent and not spreading this, stopping the spread of the virus. And I think that's something that's really important that we continue to do. We will not be able to reopen schools until we get to that point. As a matter of fact, there's not one single factor that's led to the increase of COVID. However, the bottom line is when more people see each other, that's where the COVID spread happens. And we're serious about reminding residents about COVID-19 guidelines that are in place. I can't stress enough wearing masks, washing hands, avoiding large gatherings, because, at the moment, we're concerned about, our restaurants and our hair salons and our parks and everything else. At some point, if we continue to grow here, we'll have to take further action.
So, Mayor Walsh, I want to stop you there for a second, because I do think part of what Alicia was asking was, if we need to get back below 5% for the schools, are you not taking steps to roll back the phased reopening to a place where maybe hair salons are closed, or, back to phase one or an earlier part of phase two? I think that was part of her question.
Right now, the numbers don't reflect that the increase is because of restaurants and things like that, and we are watching them. If you notice, the governor took some action on, I think it was Friday, he saw outbreaks and through the tracing in youth hockey. They saw increases in youth hockey in, I think, 30 programs across the Commonwealth. So they rolled back that one area. So we are looking right now, our public health department is looking at all of what we've opened to see what and if and when we have to roll things back.
So I do want to stay on that then for a minute, Mayor Walsh, because the same day that you announced that in-person schooling would have to cease, DESE put out a statement saying that districts and schools currently open for in-person instruction, quote, are encouraged to remain open even if their local community is designated as red, so long as there is no evidence of COVID-19 transmission in schools, end quote. Were you seeing evidence of transmission in the schools? And if not,
no.
I know how important it was for you to have high-need learners in the schools. Why take that step?
The way that the state does their red category and the way we do ours, we're using almost two different metrics. The state's category is any 8 cases per 100,000 people. In some of the cities and towns across Massachusetts are smaller towns, and 8 cases puts them in the red instantaneously. And I think if you can isolate and track those cases back to where they came from, you don't have to close school. I think the DESE guidelines and the CDC guidelines call for a 5% test rate. All schools should be shut down. You can't compare Boston to every city and town. It's like comparing apples to oranges. It just doesn't work that way. And quite honestly, when we looked at the rate, we made it very clear. We actually went with a more conservative number of 4%. And it really is about making sure that our students, our teachers, our staff, our faculty, our parents are all safe. And that's why we chose the 4% rate to close school if we had to. We were able to, with the high-need students, our public health department looked at that number and realized that, we're talking, we had an average of 10 people in the school. So we felt at a above 4% rate, we could teach safely and our kids would be in a safe environment. The issue was that we went from 4.4% to 5.7% in a one-week period. And that number was just too big of a number to risk keeping school open for another week. And if we had kept it open, it would have been shut down, obviously, on Friday because we went to 6.2%.
So as you think about what it's going to take now that we are beginning to surge and we're headed into cold weather and flu season, do you have any optimism that you'll be able to get the high need learners back in school fairly quickly, or there were other phases you had already postponed of putting other kids back in the classroom, in the building? Are we potentially looking at spring now before young people are back in school buildings?
Before we even get there, I think we have to get our number back down. We are still below the average COVID that we saw at the peak in April and May. We are not at the point where we need to shut everything down again. We're experiencing what living with COVID looks like, but being able to move forward and recover while containing outbreaks of the virus is really important for us. So we are concerned that increased activity that's happening, we're doing targeted responses in neighborhoods and demographics, which the cases might be the highest. So we're bringing mobile testing to multilingual communities, outreach to those neighborhoods. And half of our cases are right now coming roughly half are coming out of Latino community. We're bringing bilingual outreach and extra free testing for those communities, so we can try and get that under control. We also have many families, multi-generational families living in households, and if they need support, we need to help them with that. The other half of our cases are coming with people under the age of 30 years old. So it's not even college students. It's students that kind of came out of college that are now in the workforce. And I've been urging young people, young adults, to avoid gatherings. We had not many this weekend, but previous weeks we've got many reports of house parties, and we're working on developing enforcement strategies. So if we don't get the average case under control, then obviously it's not only going to be detrimental potentially to school and when we can bring kids back, it's going to be detrimental to all the other businesses and areas in the city of Boston.
I want to shift gears here because the state eviction moratorium expired on the 17th, a week ago Saturday. Courts are going to start moving through a backlog of eviction cases. A recent WBUR analysis found nearly 750 of those cases were filed in Boston from January to September. What are you doing to help people facing eviction, and what are the important next steps?
Well, I think that first and foremost, we kept our eviction moratorium in the city of Boston in place. These are Boston Public Housing Authority sites. The families in there are also concerned about eviction, so we kept the eviction moratorium through the end of the year. Continue to advocate with both the state and federal government for more resources, more relief, and more protections. As you just said, right now we're facing a crisis as a city, and we must take whatever steps we can to intervene to help and provide assistance. was sending mailers with messages in 9 different languages to 46,000 households in Boston that may be in risk of eviction. It lets them know clearly what they can do, what they can do not to have, they don't have to leave their homes if they receive notice to quit. It points them to information resources. We're also encouraging people. I invited owners of buildings and managers of buildings of low-income apartments to sign the Housing Stability Pledge. This is what they say in the pledge. They're going to abide by the CDC moratorium on evictions for renters who have lost their income due to COVID-19. They're going to be engaging with tenants to create workable payment plans if they're behind on their rent. They're going to accept rental assistance that the city or other agencies provide. So we have a program, and the state's putting together a program. We're asking them to be flexible in specific ways when tenants have lost their income. We also announced the reopening of applications for our rental assistance fund. The fund
and
is created
and,
April
and you're fair. Putting, I think, $5 million more dollars into that rental assistance
five,
fund. Is that right?
$5 million into that. And then also we're suggesting that not only renters but homeowners also reach out, because a lot of times they have tenants that might not understand where they can go for resources. And the Office of Housing Stability in the City of Boston, our website, they can go to the Office of Housing Stability and find out how they access these programs.
And Mayor Walsh, the Housing Stability Pledge, what happens if someone who signed it breaks the pledge? Are there teeth there? Do you have enforcement?
I don't want to look at the negative of that. I mean, I don't see why a landowner or a landlord or a manager would sign the pledge and break the pledge. I just don't see why they would even take the time out. But we're constantly staying and we're preparing for, I'm not sure what the numbers are going to be here in the city. Some studies have said in Massachusetts the numbers are going to be high. I'm not sure if that will be the same case in Boston, but we're working every day. Our housing office is working every day to keep renters and homeowners, quite honestly, to be able to not lose their homes. So we've worked with banks and worked out deals with banks where people are worrying about being foreclosed on. So we're working on all these different levels.
So let's don't move on to police, because we didn't mention that one at the top either when I was giving the laundry list of your last 10 days or so, but you embraced the full slate of reforms recommended by the Reform Task Force last month. And I know the first part of that package went before the City Council last week. That has to do with the proposal to give more preference to Boston Public School grads who want to work for the department. That also requires a change in state law. Are you feeling good about that happening, the necessary changes being made?
We'll see. I mean, we're going to file that with the council. The council will pass it, and then we'll put up to the State House as a home rule petition. I'm hoping that they'll accept that. Much of the reform that was filed that the task force did, most of that work can be done without law changes and without negotiations. So we're working towards in putting all of these different pieces in place. The action that was taken 2 weeks ago now, the timeline is about 180 days. We're going to have to create an Office of Police Accountability and Transparency that's going to have full subpoena power. We're also working on, within the police department, creating a diversity and inclusion unit within the police department to work on representation and equity for officers of color. The Body Worn Camera program, we have it here in Boston, and we're looking to expand it. And also looking at the call for enhanced use of force policies that's articulated in the CLID disciplinary code. That's going to be done by the police department. So we're working, and we're also going to, all of this information is going to be up on a dashboard. It's the cost of greater transparency. So we're going to be putting all this stuff on a dashboard. We're working on all these things now.
We've got about 2 minutes left. Mayor Walsh, the Boston Police Patrolmen's Association has been critical of the recommendations. We talked to the head of the association, Larry Calderoni, the day after the recommendations released. I asked him if he had attempted to reach out to the task force during their process or vice versa, and he said no. But he has been quite critical of their exclusion from the process. So how do you think about the path forward with the union on the portions where their cooperation or their contract is really important?
I think the majority of the officers understand the importance of this task force. I mean, I think we're one of the first cities in America that took this very seriously and came up with recommendations in a very timely fashion. I'm trying to look at other places in America where they've done this task force, and I haven't seen other cities that have worked so quickly. This is an important moment in time for all of us. Racism is real in America. Systemic racism has been in America forever, and now's the time for us to take action and move forward. And The police task force is one component of this, and it really doesn't hurt police officers. If anything, it continues to build confidence, and that's what we have to do here. And it allows the public an opportunity, if they want to put complaints in or concerns they have, that they don't have to go to the police department. They don't even come to City Hall. This office will not be housed in City Hall. It will be a city office, but we want to make it easy for people to come in and feel that they can come in, and if they want to make a complaint, they can, and then they can track that complaint in real time on what's going to be a dashboard. They're going to be given a number, and to make sure that there's also going to be a civilian component of this, that people will actually get a chance to look at all these cases.
There are a lot of reforms there. You've set a 180-day timeline. What is the most important thing in your mind to get done first?
I don't think there's any per se one important thing, but if I had to pick one important thing, it really is the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency. That's the office that really has been a consistent ask for a long time here. We did have the co-op board, but clearly the co-op board didn't. Their function was 20% of internal affair cases, and it really didn't get to the heart of what people are concerned about. But the other pieces of this, it's all one big piece. So it's important. You can't just do one and not do another. So, but I think the Office of Police Accountability and Transparency is the biggest change that we're going to have here in Boston.
All right. As we close, I wanted to ask you, I voted early at my local polling station on Saturday. Have you voted yet? And what is your method of choice this year?
It's so funny. I've changed my mind so many times. So in the primary, I voted by mail, and it was great. I mailed my ballot in. And it was in there, and you can track it, and it worked out really well. On election day, I intend on going to the polls on election day this time. I might do an early vote, I might do a mail-in ballot still, but I've gone back and forth. I'm kind of a traditionalist. I like to go in and vote on election day, but I am encouraging people, whatever your means of voting is, you still have plenty of time to get your mail-in ballot. If you've mailed it in and you're not sure your ballot is, you can track your ballot online. And I'm just asking everyone, make sure you go out and vote on Tuesday. You know, you can vote at City Hall. You can vote in different locations. You can vote by mail. But make sure everyone gets a chance to vote. Your voice is important. This election is about the future of our country. There's no question about it. This is the most important election in the history of the United States of America. Where we've been for the last 3.5 years and where we need to go are two very different places.
And that is Boston Mayor Marty Walsh in our Mondays with the Mayor. Thank you so much for taking the time out for us today.
That was a fast half hour. Thank you.
It was. Thanks for being here.
My God.